You know, for the past 6 months or so, I have been I've come to see, I think, more clearly what it is that I'm saying, as they say. I see what I'm saying. And in light of this, I have found myself focusing on a couple of things that I speak about pretty much over and over again in meetings and satsang. One of those things is the fact that in the world of spiritual aspiration, nothing much has happened for 2,500 years. You know, really. I mean, there's been improvements and tweaks and different ways of looking at things, but for about 2,500 years, since the time of the Buddha, nothing much new has taken place. We have been trudging along, hearing about enlightenment, seeking enlightenment, failing to gain enlightenment, settling for what we get, and so forth, for about 2,500 years. Prior to that, the world of the spirit was seen to be outside of ourselves, in forces and spirits and gods and goddesses and astrological movements and things like that. And then around 2,500 years ago, there occurred a shift in humanity's consciousness in which we came to see that the spiritual world is within us, which was a huge, radical break. Now, of course, there remain vestiges of the old ways of looking at things, vestiges of seeking after the boons or the displeasure of gods and goddesses and spirits and forces and so forth. And that's okay. I mean, there are phenomena in our world which are adequately explained in those terms. But for the most part, in the world of the spirit, we have been focusing on the inner life, on the truth found within, on the rising and falling of spiritual experience within us. And nothing much has changed, as I said. We learned how to meditate, we learned how to do pranayama, we learned how to gain and lose enlightenment experiences, and pretty much that's what we've been doing for 2,500 years. That's one of the things I've been talking about, and I've been talking about it in hopes of putting Ramana and the radical breakthrough that Ramana represents in the context in which he appeared. Because Ramana represents as radical a break with the past, as did the shift from viewing the world of the spirit as outside us to viewing it as inside us. So, I've talked about that a lot. And another thing I've talked about is how radical Ramana's view of things really is, and how radical the offering he makes to us really is, with some discussion of the possible causality of that. I mean, Ramana was not really a spiritual practitioner. He grew up in a certain spiritual culture, so he had the language and the vernacular of that spiritual culture, but he wasn't a spiritual practitioner. He was a 16-year-old boy, for God's sake, who played soccer and probably chased girls, although that, I suspect, would be suppressed by now by those who would make of him a god, therefore putting him outside of us again. But he wasn't a spiritual person. He wasn't someone who meditated and read the sutras and the shastras and the scriptures and the Vedas and the Upanishads and sought for a deeper understanding of Advaita reality and all of that. He was a 16-year-old boy who was struck entirely by surprise by the discovery of reality, taken entirely by surprise by it. And so surprised was he by what he saw that he fell into silence for 12 years. He left his home and his family and his life and fell silent for 12 years. Read things, began to learn things, began to put what he had seen in the context of spiritual understanding. And then after 12 years, and after having been hounded for most of those 12 years, chased from cave to cave and place to place by people who thought that he had something to give them, he started speaking. He relented and started speaking and started meeting with people and started offering to people the radical insight that had come to him, which we now speak of as self-inquiry, which is the other thing I've been speaking about, self-inquiry. Self-inquiry starts with this really, really radical seeing that the only problem is a false belief about what I am. I mean, seeing it, not hearing it said or reading it by somebody else saying your problem is misidentification and identification with the ego and so forth, but really getting it. Yeah, that's it. That's the problem. I think I am my life. And if I am my life, then, well, that's a problem. And seeing that, if that's true, then that's a problem. And if it's false, as all of the spiritual teachings tell us, then the only solution to that problem is the truth. There's nothing whatsoever that I can do within my life that will solve the problem of my belief that I am my life. There's nothing whatsoever I can do to make myself clearer and more fragrant and my mind softer and quieter or my understanding deeper and more subtle that can possibly free me of the idea that I am my life. Anything that I do within it can only strengthen and deepen the power of that belief, which already is powerful enough. I mean, of course I believe I'm my life. What else could I be? My thoughts, my mind, my story, my history, what I was yesterday, what I want to be tomorrow. Of course that's what I am. Ramana's insight is that maybe that's not so. And if it's not so, then it should be easy to find out by finding out what I am, by being finished with operating on the assumption, the justifiable, really justifiable assumption that I am this life, this unfolding storyline, and see directly for myself what I am, and that's easy, because I'm here. I mean, the one thing that I can be certain of is me. Everything else is provisional. My history, I mean, I make all that up. God knows I've done so. Certainly my hopes and thoughts and dreams and expectations. But me, that's for sure. I am here. I am never absent. And the looking directly with eyes wide open at the reality of this existence that I am, this feeling of being that I am, is looking directly with eyes wide open at the reality of what I am, and it should rid me of the false belief that I am other than that. That I am that which is an addition, an add-on to that, which comes and goes within that. And those are the things I've been talking about for about 6 months now, pretty much exclusively. And I don't expect that I'm going to talk about anything too much different than that today. Except that one thing I really want to make very clear and focus on a little bit today is the ease of this. How easy this is. And it's important for us to consider that, because we have been told and we've come to believe, justifiably, that this whole business of spiritual attainment is hard. It's only for the special few, and it takes literally lifetimes. I mean, that's what they tell us. It takes literally lifetimes of dedicated, devoted effort to free myself of this false identification. And I tell you, and Ramana tells you, that that's not so. It's really easy. To begin with, if it is true that you are this unmoving, perfect, clear, unchanging reality, then, well, you already are that. And nothing whatsoever that you do can make you become that or make you become other than that. First of all, there's nothing that you can be getting other than what you already are. So it's easy. I mean, what could be easier than that? The wood of this chair doesn't need to strive to be wood. It is wood. It may get some crazy idea in its mind that it is something else, but despite all of those ideas, it remains wood, with the characteristics of wood. In the same way, you are, well, that, as they say. And you are that, no matter what crazy ideas you may entertain about being other than that, about being thoughts and lives and beliefs, memories, and so forth. No matter how deeply and how convinced you are that you are your life, your thoughts, your mind, your memories, your past, your future, you remain that. Can't get away from it. You remain you. Can't get away from it. So to begin with, it's really easy, since nothing really needs to be done for you to become what you already are. The only purpose of doing anything, such as inquiring into what you are, is to rid yourself of this false belief, which is, I promise you, from my heart, I swear to God, I cross my heart and hope to die, which is the cause of every ounce of misery that afflicts you. Now, it's easy to think when I speak about self-inquiry, which is nothing more than just looking at yourself. I mean, really, that's all there is to it, just looking at yourself. It's easy to think that self-inquiry is a means to an end. It is a method of gaining the answer. But that's not true either. It's much easier than that. Self-inquiry is the answer. Really, that this should arise in you, the possibility of self-regard and the possibility of considering that you may be not what you think you are. That's all there is to it. Once that possibility arises in your mind, you're done. You know, I mean, you may not think you're done, and it may take you a while to see that you're done, but you're done. Because the fact of the matter is that once you embark on even the most superficial glance looking for what you really are, you find, even if you don't admit it right away, you find that that's what you've always wanted. That's what you've been wanting to do for your whole life. In fact, that's what you've been trying to do for your whole life. Everything you've done to try to become what you want to be or try to get rid of what you don't want to be is a flawed effort at self-inquiry, at determining what you are. And every moment that you spend looking at yourself directly, every second, every nanosecond that you spend in the direct, unmediated meeting with the reality that you are, weakens this belief that you are your life. And over time, the consciousness of reality mingles in your everyday conviction that you are your thoughts and your history and your future. That the consciousness, the conscious apprehension of the reality that you are begins to saturate the daily, ordinary, mundane experience of being that you are. But it's easy. You can't believe how easy this is, really. It's easy. It is so easy that its ease itself stands as a hindrance. Can't be this easy. But you can't get away from you. No matter how hard you try, you cannot escape from yourself. No matter how much you might want to, whether you are looking at states of horror and pain and regret and suffering and so forth, or you are looking at states of bliss and clarity and open-heartedness and generosity, you haven't changed. You're the same. You've never moved. You've never done anything. You've never had anything done to you. It's easy. 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 Ramana spoke of self-realization as being, you know, like there are all these in the literatures of spiritual aspiration, especially the Advaitic type of spiritual aspiration. There are all these states and stages and samadhis and different kinds of samadhi, meaning different kinds of things, and different kinds of samadhi being like, for example, there's nirvikalpa samadhi, which is supposed to be the samadhi of samadhis. But you have that every night in sleep. Nothing's there except you. Ramana spoke of the highest state as being what he called, and I suspect that he coined this term, sahaj samadhi. Sahaj is a Sanskrit word that means easy and natural. That's all. Easy and natural. So that to Ramana Maharshi, to the method of self-inquiry, to the offering of self-inquiry, really, there's nothing whatsoever that you need to do about yourself. You don't have to take on new practices. You don't have to get rid of your old practices. You don't have to stop meditating. You don't have to stop seeking after states. You don't have to stop being stupid. You don't have to stop being smart. You don't have to gain understanding. You don't have to lose understanding. You don't have to be good. You don't have to be bad. The only thing that's asked of you is that you see that you are not any of that. That your belief that you are the one who is good, the one who is bad, the one who is smart, the one who is dumb, the one who understands, the one who doesn't understand, the one doing meditation, the one refusing to do meditation, that idea is false. And when that idea is the idea that you are any of that is gone, what need is there to do anything about any of it? Really? When the idea that you are any of that is gone, what stake is there for you in any of that? Really? So, we start with the proposition that you are not what you believe yourself to be, and that what you believe yourself to be is your life, is the whole of your life. The mind, the thoughts, the past, the present, the future, all of it. The goodness, the badness, the whole thing. There is a false belief about what you are, and that belief is that you are your life. If that proposition is true, then it should be easy for you to get rid of that, simply by seeing what you are. And the reason it's easy is because you are never missing. There's never, ever, ever a moment when you're not here. I have compared this business of self-inquiry with medicine. And I do so not because it's really a medicine that cures anything, because there really isn't anything that needs to be cured, but because it is not spiritual. We make a huge mistake when we approach the self-inquiry of Ramana Maharshi as a spiritual endeavor. It is not. It is practical. It is a means whereby you can get rid of a false idea. That's all it is. And it is infallible. Nothing you can do can make it not work. Really. As long as you look at yourself, nothing you can do can make that not work. No matter how you shrink from it, or go chasing after something, or try to cling to something, or resist something, none of that can stop self-inquiry from working in eating up, dissolving the false idea that you are any of that. And anything you do to try to get rid of resistance or to try to get rid of clinging has the opposite characteristic to it. It cannot help you. Cannot. If it's true that a false belief is the problem, then nothing you do about the artifact that is what you falsely believe yourself to be can help you. If you become the clearest, most powerful, most wondrous spiritual being that has ever walked the planet, and you believe yourself to be that, you will suffer. Really. If you become the devil himself, with horns and tail, breathing fire, hateful, disregarding all goodness, wanting only evil for its own sake, and you believe yourself to be that, you will suffer. And that stuff's hard. Truth is easy. And that's the point I want to make today. Truth is easy. Truth isn't hard. And self-inquiry is the answer. Okay, I'm done for now. Anybody want to talk to me? Yes, got to come up here.
talking to this?
Yes, you have to talk into that. Otherwise, Carl will beat you up.
Where do you think our spirit goes when we die?
What is it you're talking about, the spirit that goes somewhere?
Well, you said the spirit is within us.
I didn't say anything about the spirit being anywhere. I said we came to the view that the spiritual world was within us rather than outside of us. Okay. It's not to say that there is not a spirit that comes and goes. I'm sure there is. But I want to know what you mean by that.
I meant like my own personal spirit or everyone's spiritual life that they have inside of us, that we all have inside.
What do you care?
I'm just curious. Yeah, just my personal knowledge about it. But you think I shouldn't care, right?
I don't think it matters whether you care about it or not. I mean, I think what you're asking me, and you tell me, what's your name?
Adam.
Adam? Wow, what an appropriate name to be talking about this. What I think you're asking me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is what happens to me when I die? And I think that what you're referring to as you is your life, the Adam person who was at one time did not exist and then was born and was a child and went through childhood and adolescence and so forth, and now is a young man and has some expectations and, you know, things you do in the world and so forth and think about and the thoughts about them. Is that what you're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
What happens to that is the same thing that happens to that all the time. It goes. I mean, you're not that Adam isn't always here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Am I right?
I'm not always here.
Adam isn't. You're always here.
Right.
But you're not Adam. You need to hold the microphone up there.
Okay.
Adam isn't always here, is he?
Adam, what do you mean?
I mean, Adam, the guy, the personality.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in deep sleep, there's no Adam, is there?
Maybe in my dreams, but
that's
yeah.
Dreams, you know, there's dreams. But then there's deep sleep when there is no Adam.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. So what we know about Adam with the whole array, I'm not talking about anything small, right? I'm talking about the whole apparatus of Adam. One thing we know about him for sure is that he comes and goes. Right?
Okay.
Is that not the case?
Yeah. That's true.
And also you will see, if you pay attention during the day, as you go about your daily business, you will notice, if you're paying attention, that there are many times during the day when Adam actually is absent. When there isn't any thinking going on, any reflection or, you know, consideration and so forth, self-consciousness going on, when Adam is absent. And then he comes back, and then he goes again. So upon the death of the body, and, you know, like the body is part of what Adam is. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So upon the death of the body, well, Adam, I would expect, goes. Just as he does in deep sleep. Just as he does when there is no self-consciousness during the day. But what is that to you? What are you?
Just a person.
Really?
No.
Are you not still here when Adam is missing? Is there ever a time when you're not here?
Maybe not.
Yeah, well, that's the right answer. And the possibility that I offer to you is finding out. And the way you find out is this. You are here now, right? There's absolutely no doubt in your mind that you're here. What does that certainty of being feel like?
It feels good.
Yeah. And you, but you can see that there's a kind of experience that isn't gross. It's very hard to put your finger on. That is the experience of being, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Now what I tell you is that that experience of being is what you are. Absolutely. There is nothing to you but that. And that that never is absent. Now, what I want from you is to find out for yourself whether that's true. If you take that, if I am successful in being like, I don't know, eloquent and persuasive and so forth, and you come to believe that to be true, well, that won't do you any good. Really. What I want you to do is to, every time you get a chance, every time it occurs to you to do so, just take a second and do what we just did and see if you are not here and what you are. What it is that is this certainty of being that makes you know that you are. And it's not dependent upon the body. You can see that if you look. If you get your legs chopped off, that will be unaffected. So, what I want you to do is just that. Is whenever it occurs to you, whenever you don't know what you should be doing next, do that. Stop for just 1 second and feel the pure feeling of being. And what I tell you will come from that is that this underlying conviction that you are Adam will gradually be taken away from you. It'll be gone before you know it's gone. It's not like, you know, like, oh, all of a sudden I am God. That's just another idea. But you will see over time that your life is easier. That the feeling that there's something at stake here for you isn't so much here anymore. And that the absence of that, although there are those who believe that losing that would be losing the zest of life and so forth, that the opposite is true. That as the idea that I am at stake in this life begins to vanish, life reveals itself to be beautiful beyond belief, beyond anything I could imagine when I thought it had to be this way because I am at stake here. But this is really simple. I don't want you to believe any of that. I just want you to look at yourself. Whenever it occurs to you to do so, just look at yourself. Think of it as taking medicine, not as anything spiritual. Think of it as taking an antibiotic. You don't know what an antibiotic does when you take it. I mean, you might study up on it and so forth, but in the actual experience of it, you don't know what's going on. You just take it and you feel better. It's the same with self-inquiry. Okay?
All right. Thank you.
I'm very happy. Thank you, Adam.
Great.
That's my most recent, what's the word I'm looking for? Self-inquiry is medicine.
Make that statement again, sir.
Self-inquiry is medicine.
What you said about it.
Oh, I can't say that. Anybody else? Yes, Arnell? It's easy, really, it's easy. We really want to make it hard, you know, and that can only be because we believe we're this story. And if we are this story, then short of God, it is really hard for us to escape from it.
Hi. I'm sort of feeling a little heightened right now, and I was, as you were speaking to Adam over there, I was very, very much in my story and ping-ponging back and forth. Well, should I raise my hand? Should I not? Should I? And at least some of your talk got transmitted through me in spite of all that cacophony, so I am grateful for that.
Okay.
And also, I must tell you that the first time I came to see you, well, the reverberations for that are still going ever outward. And I am grateful. Thank you.
Me too.
I began this spiritual quest. The impetus for it actually came from pain. And it was a pain of the most banal, mundane kind. A relationship ended very much against my will, and I have been in search of a way, a method, a technique, if you will, to end it. My therapist says, dig up all those beliefs, find out what they are, and give yourself a new set of beliefs.
Yes, right.
Gangaji says, find the source of that pain, I paraphrase her, and go deeper and see what's really there. And if I've been hearing you correctly, you say, for whom is this pain a problem?
Yes, that's correct.
And I get glimpses of an answer to that, and it gives satisfaction of a momentary kind. And for a moment, I'm at peace, or in a state that's not in pain, not yearning, not longing. And many days, that's quite enough. What I want to ask you about is this feeling of being stuck or up against a wall where I think I'm more likely believing than actually seeing that there is nothing there and there is no one here. And I was wondering if you could address that at further length.
It's not a problem.
Okay.
What
relief. Really. And the short answer is, it's not a problem. Of course, we think that if I am stuck in something and I am caught up in some obviously false practice that I'm carrying on, that that has to be put an end to because that's the problem. I tell you, that's not the problem. It doesn't need to come, it doesn't need to stay, it doesn't need to go. It's just one of the practices that make up the story of Arnell. And if you are that story, then it's a problem. And then, as your therapist says, or as anybody else says, you may need to rid yourself of it or transform it into something else or whatever. And I tell you that it's not a problem, that it can be quite safely ignored. And by ignored, I mean even if you like just squeeze juice out of it, that doesn't matter. That can't hurt you. It can only hurt you if you are Arnell. And I tell you, you are not Arnell. And the solution is to be rid of the idea that you are Arnell, not to do something about Arnell's foolishness. Right? And quite surprisingly, in the gradual eradication of the belief that you are Arnell, you will probably find that Arnell gets less foolish. And I'm not sure why that's so, but it seems to be uniformly the case. There's no good reason why it should be. So that's what I say.
I see.
And I'll tell you something else, too. The foolishness of Arnell's whatever it was you said earlier, I don't even remember. But all of that in no way interferes with self-inquiry. You know, in the midst of it, it's possible for you to stop for just a second and without regard to whether it is good for Arnell or bad for Arnell, whether it fixes things or doesn't fix things, just stop for a second and take the medicine. Am I here? Ah, what's that? What am I? And then go back to it and work with it.
And work it.
Work it, yeah. I mean, really, get all the juice out of it you can.
That's okay. Well,
it ain't going to last.
Well, you know what?
Might as well enjoy it while you can.
I'm actually coming around to that point of view.
Yes.
It doesn't last much, to my astonishment. it comes back. And that's another thing too that, you know, is crushingly predictable sometimes. But it does come back, and I'm flooded once again.
Yes, but again,
right?
That's only a problem if that's you.
Ah, okay.
Right? And I say it's not you. Now, I could be lying, but at least I'm not giving you some new belief to take on.
Well, yes.
Right? You are infinite, eternal consciousness, or you're the heart of all being, or you are, I don't know, love itself or something. You know, I mean, you can decide that once you have seen directly for yourself the reality of what you are before the stories. And I tell you, you're not Arnell, you're not any of that. And what I offer you and what I invite you to do is find out whether I'm lying to you or not. Which is really easy, because here you are.
Right. It's all very simple, isn't it?
It is very simple. And you can see, I know you can see, that this that you are has never, ever been damaged, touched, enhanced, or changed in any way by the most crushing, the most dramatic, the most melodramatic unfoldments within your life. Hmm. You must be able to see that. When you look at yourself, you're the same. Ah, simple, I'm here. Never been other than that. I'm here. Hmm. There's nothing at stake in this life for you.
And that's a relief.
Yes.
Very much so. And this self-inquiry, even if I'm doing it with dishonesty and with a motive
Doesn't matter.
To feel better.
Doesn't matter. I'm really glad you asked that question. It doesn't matter. There's no virtue in this. Really? Yay. There's no virtue in this. It doesn't matter whether you're doing it to get high. As long as what you're doing is looking for yourself. It doesn't matter whether you think you're going to get enlightenment, whether you think you're going to get self-realization, whether you think you're going to become God, right? All that matters is that you're looking directly for yourself, for the reality of what you are. And what motivates you to do that is beside the point. I'm glad you asked that.
I am too. It's enlightening me.
Yes.
Already.
In a good way.
In a very good way.
I see what you're saying.
Thank you very much, John.
You're very welcome, Arnell. I'm happy to hear from you like this.
Thank you.
You know, we're brought up to think, right, there's righteousness and unrighteousness. And if I enter into this practice, I mean, the Buddhists don't help much with this, right? I mean, but if I enter into this practice for selfish reasons, then I'm doomed. Well, why else would you enter into this practice? You know, I mean, really. And it's only ignorance, and in the best sense of ignorance, it's only ignorance that leads us to believe, in the first place, that there's anything to be gotten. And what form that ignorance takes doesn't matter. I mean, of course you're in this to get something. But what you get is not what you expect. Because what you get is what you already are. And have never not been, and have never not known it. That's a real shocker. And you can see, you know, that there have been those over time who have made these bewildering assertions that we have made big spiritual things about. You know, the Buddhists tell us that the journey to enlightenment is a journey to the other shore, to the far shore, and that there are adventures and things that you have to undergo in order to get there, and your boat, your ferry boat, whether it be the little ferry boat or the big ferry boat or the diamond ferry boat or whatever, that your boat will be what it is, and you'll be beset by storms and all of these things, and that then when you finally attain the far shore, you will discover that it is the same shore that you left. Not like a copy of the shore that you left, but exactly the shore that you left. And they tell us those things, and we make a big spiritual to-do about them and so forth, and don't see that what they're pointing to is the simple reality that you already are what you want to be. Already. You've never been other than that. Already. And that, as Ramana assures us, all your practices, none of your practices can do you harm, none of your practices can do you the slightest bit of good, and all of your practices, in the end up here. In the question, what am I? Really. There's no other question that matters. Really. So, do it for whatever reason. Do it to, you know, to get girlfriends or boyfriends or to lose weight or to, you know, I mean, it'll be as effective as anything else you do with those endeavors. Just do it. Okay? It's easy. That's the point of this meeting today. It's easy. And any deviation from that is a deviation into being hard. It's easy. My God, here you are. You can't doubt it. You can't deny it. You can't get away from it. Here you are. What you think you are changes constantly. Gets old, dies, moves, learns, forgets, finds love, loses love, believes this, believes that. What you think you are is endlessly changing, despite the self-evident reality that you have never changed. You are the same as you were when you were 3, or 13, or 30. And you know it. Anything else? Jan, is that right? Wow. That's so not like me. Hi, I'm glad to see you again.
I'm glad to see you too. Is this on?
It's on. You don't have to do anything except speak into it.
I guess I just wanted to report
good
to you. I've been doing this practice. And I'm here.
And you're here. Yes, you are.
And everything is just fine.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. I don't have a job.
Yeah.
And everything is just
everything's just fine.
Everything is just fine.
Always has been.
Yeah. It always has been. It's really hard to explain.
It's really impossible to explain. People have grunted and groaned and strained for a long time trying to explain. Maybe you'll do better.
No, I think my friends say, so what have you been doing? Like, well, are you looking for a job? And you know, I just can't explain. I don't understand.
I don't either.
It's okay.
Jan, I am really happy to hear this report from you. You can't imagine how happy I am.
I feel guilty sort of sometimes, you know? It's like, what am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
But it goes away.
Yes, of course it does. That's the key. See, that's the thing. It goes away. Guilt comes, guilt leaves. Pleasure comes, pleasure leaves. Happiness comes, happiness leaves. Seriousness comes, serious leaves. What does it come and leave? You. Just you. Comes in you, it leaves you. It appears in you, it leaves you. You remain.
Yeah.
That's right. And there was a time in life when the appearance of guilt would have meant something really bad. You know, like, oh my God, something's wrong because I feel guilty. I am so guilty about feeling guilty. But really, who cares?
Yeah. And then I think sometimes that I should be able to understand this better or be able to explain it or know it or, you know, and that leaves too.
Yes, like, that's right. Yeah, that's right. You know, just never know what's going to happen. That's a fact. You just never know. What happens, happens. In this time, you know, the idea I should be able to understand it comes and goes without too much, and it may come that the time comes when you say, oh, I get it, and I really want to speak about it, or I really want to tell somebody about it, or I really want to write about it, or I really want to sing about it or something. And that'll go too. It may last longer, but it'll go too.
Mm.
And you'll remain.
Yeah.
Through it all.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I know I wanted to share something with, I guess I had a question, but I forgot and now I remembered. I belong to a 12-step program. And I don't really know what I'm doing, really, anymore. Just being of service, I guess. That's the best I can come up with. Is just, are you familiar with 12-step?
I'm familiar with 12-step. They've done really good work and helped people, as I understand. Yeah.
But every once in a while, I get caught up in helping somebody else. Like I think that I'm really helping somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And
so?
And then that goes away too.
Yeah,
because
so?
It's
really?
You know, it's like,
yeah, it doesn't matter.
Oh, okay.
It really doesn't matter. You
okay.
Can think you're helping somebody. That'll go away.
Yeah. It does
you
go
know,
away.
Really. No, nothing touches you, Jan. And it's just the perversion of spiritual understanding that has burdened us with these ideas that I shouldn't be doing anything, that I shouldn't be thinking I'm doing anything, that I shouldn't be thinking I'm helping anybody. It's just the burden of these spiritual ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And even that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Here you are. It doesn't touch you. You're here before. You're here during, and you're here after all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole spiritual melodrama that the way spiritual life is generally played out is in kind of a melodrama.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, I get that, and then, well, no, I didn't get it, I was wrong about that, and I have to be really careful because I know that if I do just the slightest thing wrong, if I get caught in the trap of thinking that I am somebody, helping somebody else, then I have, I don't know, left the path or something. You know, but really, when you know, really, that's only true. It's only true if that's you.
Yeah.
That's the only way it's true. So the first question should be, is that me? I mean, they all tell me it's not, so let's get to the heart of the matter.
But that seems to come and go.
Yes, it does. It all comes and goes.
Identification and then...
Yeah, right, it does. But you see that now.
Yeah.
You see that.
Yeah. It's fun.
Finally.
I listened to you on your podcast, which has really, really been helpful.
I'm happy to hear that. I wondered about that when we started putting them online, and we've had really good reports from well, all over the world about these podcasts and how useful they are to people. So I'm very happy to hear that.
Yeah.
You know, we did something else a couple of weeks ago. We had an online live satsang.
I saw that. I missed that. I mean, I saw it after it happened.
And it was quite exciting. It was quite wondrous. You know, it's a method that we need to learn how to use better, but it was really quite exciting. And we had people from, Thailand and Budapest and the Netherlands and I don't know what all.
Turkey.
Santa Monica. That's right. So, I'm happy that the podcasts are useful.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. I'm so glad to see you. Anyway, I remember when I met you first in Ojai.
Yeah.
Not so long ago. That's the radicalness of Ramana's breakthrough. The radicalness of it is the recognition that all of this stuff that we think is wrong with us, well, if it's not us, then what do we care? Really? Oh my God, I can't be doing self-inquiry in order that I can get to feel better. That wouldn't be spiritual enough. You know? I mean, really. Self-inquiry is infallible. There's nothing you can do to corrupt it. Nothing. The simple essence of it is that your main goal is to see what you are. And as long as that's what you're doing, you can't do it wrong. You cannot do it wrong. Okay? Anything more? Okay then, I guess we will quit while it's still light out. This is really exciting to leave that sign while it's still daylight. I love coming to Santa Monica. I love meeting with you. I love seeing you all. I'm your servant. As always, your servant. Thank you for this satsang. Om Shanti. May all being know itself.